Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves and today we're talking about how a picture tells a thousand words or sometimes even more. Speaking of photogenic, there's a troll sitting on a rocking chair in front of me. Martin, how are you keeping, buddy?
Thanks, Beaker.
Beaker stroke Tintin. Much more importantly, we're delighted to be joined in the Tortoise Shack by a professional photographer, award-winning professional photographer with the Press Association in Dublin. It's safe to say that if you've picked up a newspaper over the last 14 years, you've seen one of his pictures. I'm going to give his own words, actually, because this is an interesting one for you folks. I've been punched by politicians, arrested by Gardaí, and even shot in the leg by dissident Republicans while on assignment. However, I would recommend the career to anyone as it gives me a very unique look at that life that no other job can offer. Niall Carson, Niall, how are you doing, buddy?
Thanks very much. I'm glad to be finally in the Tortoise Shack.
Yeah.
Heard so much about it.
That would just stop. Niall, you were one of the earlier people who do a lot on the road. And you were one of our early listeners. And you know what? We actually do need to say thank you to you for your support from early on.
You've been one of the earliest on boards with the Tortoise Shack. That's absolutely true. And we've kept in touch over the last 2 years a lot.
Oh, it's been an education for me now, you know, especially the female contributors, you know, just remind me of my male privilege. It's always good crack.
I'm mindful of three lads in a room now. It does matter. This is a different podcast, guys. This is going to be a visual one. So what you're going to have to pull out your phones and you're going to have to look on the screen, because Niall has very kindly sought permission from some of the best photos taken down the years, and I would say in the Irish political context, and they are, no doubt about it, Martin, you used the word iconic before we started recording.
Yeah,
they are iconic. And I'm going to kick us straight in, Niall, with the picture of our former Taoiseach Bertie Ahern standing in the floodwaters in Drumcondra.
Yes, this is taken by Colin Keegan, who works for Colin's photo agency. And Colin would be sort of my number one opposition on the road. Like, we've got a bit of a friendly rivalry, but he really is the one of the number one people in Ireland for news. And so this was Bertie Ahern surveying floods after the Tolka River burst its banks in his Drumcondra constituency in 2002. Mm. And, you know, it's a great picture in that, you know, it's very dramatic and everything, you know, but, you know, it's been used again and again to illustrate kind of Bertie's woes as well. This is one of these pictures where he thought it was a good picture at the time of him out, you know, as Taoiseach, being with the people. But then, you know, as the recession started to kick in, things like that, it was used to illustrate, you know, him being in deep water, et cetera, et cetera. So those are the way photographs that take on a life of their own after they're taken, years after they're taken.
The context of it was happily be able to apply it to all sorts of swamped connotations.
Yes, exactly. And a funny headline helps too.
And the expression on his face is kind of, he's exasperated standing there in the water, in that, you know, for years they talked about the Tolka flooding and never actually got around to doing anything about it. And this was the culmination of that. He ended up as Taoiseach standing in the Tolka.
And what my favourite thing about it is actually, you can't see his feet or his legs. He appears to be kind of levitating in the water. It's such a brilliant photo.
Well, a man who can live nearly whatever 50-odd years without ever having a bank account can levitate, you know.
Well, if it had been Charlie, we would have walked on it. Absolutely.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah. A miracle, yeah.
I suppose the other thing that strikes me about it is the location. If you remember at that time, Bertie was famous for the Drumcondra Mafia. They effectively were said to run the country out of St. Luke's. And St. Luke's is just a house, folks, at the bottom of the,
across the road from Fagans.
Griffith Park and Fagans. And, I think at the time, we got to put it in the context, the country were kind of, Giffgrub Bertie, helped Bertie as well, because the idea of Bertie going into Fagin's Order of Smithics was as regular to everybody at the on the Ian Dempsey breakfast show as anything else.
Yeah.
And we all thought, sure, isn't Bertie harmless? He gives me a good laugh every morning on my way into work. And that is very much he is mere meters from his spiritual home there as he stands.
And actually I've been in the Fagin's myself for a meal just randomly with friends.
Yeah.
And he was in there and he came over and said he knew we were press photographers. And he made it his business to come over and say hello.
Oh, yeah.
And Fagin's is still quite a hot spot for politicos. It has remained such. It would have been my dad's local when he was growing up. So Fagin's is sort of in the blood on our side of the family. And yeah, it's still a very good place for politicos to meet and go and see who's in there.
Well, sadly, St. Luke's has been bequeathed back to the party and sold.
And what is it now? Yeah, I mean, it's just sold off.
Yeah, I don't know. I do go by it quite frequently. And say, but there I was, do, these
I
were
have
the
a
days.
Chuckle myself. Yeah, I stood outside it for hours waiting on coming out.
I think it was, I can't. Was it Shane Coleman who wrote the book?
The Bankers? Or
no, the Drum
Condor. Oh, the Condor Mafia. I'm not sure.
We'll give him the credit if he did anyway, Shane. It is, though, as you said, over years, that picture changed. The meaning of it changed. Bertie was described as the Teflon Taoiseach. And then when it fell apart bad. And we have seen the rehabilitation of him now across many...
the attempted rehabilitation.
You may think it's failed. It's only failed probably between these four walls, but he'll be on Marion at the weekend. I suppose the next one, and guys, this is this one that doesn't even require you to go and look at it, because as soon as I explain it to you, you're all going to go, oh, I know that one. Willie O'D. If I just say Willie O'D, you'll know he's waving a gun at you guys.
This one always reminds me of Brendan O'Carroll was on The Late Late. And he had been on it before, and you know Brendan's colourful language.
Mm-hmm.
And he did this story. He said that behind the camera was a guard, and the guard had a sniper's rifle, and he's standing there going, "Go ahead, Baldy, say fuck."
he's got a great look in his eye, a very mischievous look.
Do you want to give us the?
So again, this is before I moved, just before I moved to Dublin, and Colin Keegan again took this picture, and I remember seeing it on the news. I saw the RT news at the time. I was flabbergasted, like that he actually did it, because he pointed it into the television camera as well.
Yeah,
and I just was amazed that a politician would do this, you know. But the reason it sort of became controversial was he then had to apologize because there had been a spate of gangland shootings in his Limerick constituency.
That's right.
It just went down like a lead balloon, like, you know, and, this was it. Now, it was at a market that I would cover quite regularly. The defense forces would frequently have, open days for the media. You know, people are going to Syria or they've got new kit or whatever. They'll invite the press. And they're great, fair play to them, Defence Forces press officer, very good, like, with the media. But every time now a minister goes, they all say, "You're not going to do a Willie O'Day, me." Nobody will even look at a gun. No one even point at a gun, you know. So,
and Willie has—I tell you what—Willie has aged a lot since then. He just has the tashes; doesn't have the bit of color in it anymore.
Yeah,
he
that's
has
true.
Aged a lot since then.
Yeah, he's got a black moustache there, still, right enough. Yeah,
still tops the poll, folks.
So, yeah, always worth remembering. Gun or not, Willie tops the poll.
No, and again, another one that over the years got the meme treatment, as we say, but it certainly did make its way in, and it will always be that image. Whenever anybody mentions that name, you will just see him pointing that gun right at the camera.
Well, I think it's the defining photograph of his political career, and I think that's hard to capture in a photograph.
I wonder, does he actually have a copy of it himself? That's what I wonder.
I'm 6x6 on the wall.
I often wonder about this, you know, politicians, you know, some of them, I do like talking to them about pictures. You know, some of them approach us and say, "Who took that picture?" Lord, God's sake, lads, give us a break, would you? You know, and it's sort of made him recognizable household name, like, you know.
I would say, say he doesn't regret it at all.
I wouldn't think so.
But it's a very funny picture anyway. It just is. But unfortunately, it just was taken at the wrong time, you know, for him.
Maybe. Yeah. I'd say in the context of time, he's quite happy with it.
Yeah.
The next one, and this is the next one, is Mary Hardy with the shovel. And red paint on her hands, on her neck, on her face. I vaguely remember this context. Do you remember the context of this one, Tony?
I actually don't, no.
Go ahead, now.
Well, it was around budget time, you see. Yeah. So, and there was a, I got a phone call, 2010. Okay, I took this picture in 2010. And, there, you know, at that time, there were lots of protests about everything, you know, cutbacks and all the rest, because the economy was starting to go kaput. And I was just given a phone call saying, oh, there's going to be a protest. There's going to be something happening at this thing. And when I got to, I can't remember where it was now. I think it was up near Finglas or something, but there was a few people standing outside with placards, and I didn't see. And the minister's car, Mary was the health minister at the time, whizzed on into this sort of built-in site, which was going to turn the sod.
Yeah.
And the guards had kept everybody outside because they obviously had bored something was going to happen. So I gave them my ID and said, I need to go and photograph the sod being unturned here. And the guard, okay, go on ahead. So when I walked up, there was a whole commotion. And when I opened the gate, there was Mary Harney standing there, covered in red paint and just totally in shock. And a woman being arrested and taken away in handcuffs. And turned out she was a Dublin City Councillor, Louise Minahan, I think her name was. From, let me just see here. I think she was in Airgie, that's what it was. And she had said, yeah, it was a... she described it as a protest against a forthcoming blood budget, you know, of cuts. And
yeah.
So, unfortunately, yeah, we have seen the fallout from all these cuts as well now.
Mary's been in a few iconic photographs. I mean, I remember the one where she was on the cart behind the donkey. And that was really good.
What was that, down in Kerry or something?
Yeah,
was it
was an amazing photograph. Yeah, amazing photograph. Yeah. But this one was particularly poignant because of the timing.
Yes.
And I think the red paint probably lasted longer than Mary's career after that.
Yes, that's right. She wasn't too long.
Yeah, very shortly after that.
And a whole string of ministers at the time, I remember as well.
Yeah,
I think you're all suffering from amnesia. She was only last week giving a talk in front of the entire Fine Gael cabinet.
Not as a politician, so.
Yeah, well, yeah, she's chosen minister.
And she did like the socks.
Well, the entire party went away. You've got to remember, like, it wasn't just the failure of Mary Harney. Her the entire PDs disappeared.
Yeah.
No, good riddance from my point of view. However, like, when you look at that image, even in the context of today, it's startling. You know, in effect, a woman was assaulted. But it also, the bloody red paint is so striking, and it would strike fear into you when you know in the context of what actually then went on between the period of the collapse right up to today. And we see it even now where we talk about, you know, 780,000 people on waiting lists and, you know, record numbers on trolleys. We barely raise an eyebrow because, you know, these records are just made to be broken these days. So Mary Harney's legacy is not a good one. The PDs, one for my money in government, were all about trying to push a privatisation agenda. They were to the right of the...
Well, for my money, probably the most disruptive force in Irish politics in 40 years. The most disruptive. They were so far out there on the right, and their influence is still very much felt today. Very, very much felt today. Mm. They shifted, you know, way beyond Thatcherism. They went way beyond that right-wing Thatcherism. And they weren't a good thing for Irish politics. And I don't feel sorry that they're gone. The next one up. And this is a classic. This is lovely, lovely little kids. And they're all sitting there with these beautiful cakes in front of them. And Pat Rabbit is in there and he is hoofing the cake into them while the kids are standing by and watching. And again, it is another iconic photograph. It encapsulates Pat quite well.
No, it doesn't encapsulate him quite well. It actually frames him really badly. Let's tell the truth.
Well, it's an award-winning photograph.
It is
for that reason.
Photograph.
Yeah. So it's taken by a former colleague of mine, Julian Behal, who used to work for the Press Association. He's a freelance now, doing very well for himself, doing PR at the minute. But it's a wee bit misleading because it's Pat's birthday cake.
Yeah.
So, but that when you look at the picture, you think he's Gay crashed a children's party and at the kids' cake, you know.
And the little girl with the pink jacket, just the look on her face is just classic. She's like, oh, he's eating it all.
He's eating my cake. Leave some for me, you know. So yeah, he was basically out canvassing during the election, and he was at a primary school, and somebody, probably one of his handlers, or it might have been somebody from the school, presented him with a birthday cake as a surprise sort of photo stunt. But like all these photos, somebody thought it'd be a good idea, but when it went in the papers, kind of looked, well, not the way they wanted it to, you know.
The optics are absolutely awful. There's already, looking through my own biases, we all go, oh, look, a politician with his nose in the trough.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
And here he is. Finger in the pie.
Yeah, yeah.
He's got all those
Through it, and you look at it and you think to yourself going, oh my God, did someone not say step back for a minute? And, you know, it's taking candy from a baby. How about just pushing the kids out?
Every metaphor going, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, but also I don't feel sorry for politicians in those scenarios either, because the press officers that are with them, they're our former colleagues. These are people who worked in newspapers, who worked in press agencies, and they're very skilled at knowing what I'm going to do or the journalist is going to say. And so
It's also the eye of the photographer to be there to catch that.
Yeah.
Get down low, lovely
angle. He's got at the children's height. That's the most important thing. So he's at their eye line, and Pat looks like this big lumbering.
It's like he anticipated that shot.
I think there's a Twitter bio account. Maybe it's Gavin Riley or Sean Defoe, where it's basically, I think Gavin is almost falling over trying to get a mic in at Donald Trump.
Oh, yes.
And your arm is in there trying to take a picture. And I often look at that and I think, well, there's the boys now literally going out on a limb in the Oval Office, you know.
Those Oval Office things are crazy, you know. Because there's only supposed to be a small pool of people, but because everybody around the world wants to hear every single word that Donald Trump says, they allow a lot more people in. So it's an absolute scrum, and like furniture gets knocked over, and you know, lamps are knocked over, and pots are plants. It's just like, it's chaos, like, you know.
It's like the old Stephen's Day sales. Then is it trying to get?
And you're all the time you're looking around, you're going, wow, you know, JFK sat in that chair, or, you know, every kind of, you're thinking about all the presidents, Abraham Lincoln, and they've all been in this room, and you're in the middle of this mini kind of riot, people jostling for a position to try and get a microphone.
That, folks, is democracy.
Yeah, well, it was a it's a prestigious address, but, you know, the bad relatives have moved in now.
Well, I wasn't that overwhelmed with the Oval Office myself, but I have to say, when I did visit the White House press office, I was a bit sort of fanboy in there. Like,
yeah,
it's been in so many of the film, you know, the TV shows, West Wing, and there's been so many important addresses.
Every time he stands up to say, "Ladies and gentlemen, we got him."
Or whatever. Like I was very lucky to get in for a Sean Spicer press conference as well. And that was like a stand-up comedy routine. And
did you dance down any stairs or anything? No?
No. I did. On St. Patrick's Day, actually, the last time we were there, he turned up at the White House in a pair of shamrock trousers.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
As well. You know, it's just like, wow. I can't imagine anybody in Ireland.
He's managed to turn that into a shtick that's brought him around the world. Like, he's been in and out of the Irish Times offices.
He's making a few pounds doing the speaking tour now.
He's writing a book and then a book about his book, you know. Which actually leads us on to our next picture, because it's about our former glorious leader, and it's another iconic image. I could be wrong, but I think it was at a tech conference.
I'll tell you exactly. Okay. It was a jobs launch.
It was a jobs launch.
And this was the perfect one, you know. It may feature in Gavin Reddy's book that he's recently written there about the last days of the Taoiseach. It was in the last week.
End of days or end?
Something like that, something like 6 days that sank a Taoiseach or something like that. But But anyway, what happened was, this was like a sort of an open goal for the Taoiseach. It was a, let me see now. It's taken by Leon Farrell, who's a very, very good politics photographer as well. He works for rollingnews.ie, which was previously known as Photocall Ireland. A lot of people would be familiar with that agency. So we went into this room anyway, and there was a big sign saying, "We help people get jobs." And there were five chairs under the thing, and all the photographers were looking at the chairs going, "Please let Inda sit under the chair that says help," you know?
Yeah.
And everybody was this photographers from every newspaper and all. And he'd come in and glad handed everybody did selfies and all, and met all the staff and everything. And he's a great announcement, 500 jobs, whatever it was for Dublin.
Mm.
He sat under the chair that said help. And so then the next thing was, the help sign was just a wee bit too far above its head.
Yeah.
So all of us had to get down on the floor. Crouch,
yeah.
Get down low. No, lie down, like literally lie down on our backs to get this angle. And so he starts looking at us, and his press advisors start looking at each other, and they're all looking around. What are they photographing? What can they see?
Yeah.
And so there's like five or six photographers literally lying on our backs trying to get this picture. And he had slightly just moved to the left. No,
this is entrapment.
Yeah. And all big lenses, long lenses as well. Yeah, you know, this should have been a giveaway for him, like, you know. And then Leon got the picture.
Yeah.
This is the shot. Because he actually, at this stage, he was like, what the hell are they photographing?
Yeah.
And he looked up at the word help just above his head.
Yeah.
And we all took it, but Leon got the picture.
Yeah.
And it was in the front page of all the papers.
It's a staggering picture. And Gavin's book is called End of the Road.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Uh-huh. And it is very fitting that we talked about this picture, because it was towards the end. He was in that lame duck phase of his
matter what he was doing, launching, it was all when he leaving, when
once he announced it, that was it.
I made the comment to Gavin on and he gave me a little ba-boom that I'm not buying his book unless Noel Rock wrote three forewords for it and one epilogue at the end, because we were at that stage where he'd only nominated him three or four times in the Dáil, and then a few months later he was first out in the hustings saying, I think it's time we need to talk about a new leader, you know. And it was in that phase, but it just shows you, you know, the art of the photographer. And again, you wouldn't have thought of them, they're so oppositional to what we were going to call the handlers. Like, I mean, I can imagine John Concannon in the strategic communications unit diving at Leo's legs going, "Don't sit there."
Well, also, I mean, I have to say, for a man of his age, there isn't a grey hair in his head in that photograph. Yeah. Not a one. He's well coiffed.
He is. And fair play to him. Actually, I will give him credit for that. He was always out, you know, at cycling events and marathons, and he presented a good image.
Oh, listen, was he two or three weeks out of the job when he took a Dublin bike and cycled out to Howth with a baseball cap on backwards and the Mayo tracksuit top on, you know?
Well, I've seen him with the Mayo top a few times. And I know he's a big golf fan as well. I see him at the Irish Open. He never seems to miss it every year as well. So,
well,
I'm going to enjoy his retirement.
I'm going to move on to the next. And this is my favorite photograph, because I know I used, and I'm not allowed to say memes, Tony says. I used this myself, and loads of memes. This is when John Burton took the canoe in 6 inches of water and it capsized. And before we talk about the photograph, I just want to say my favorite meme was the one where Jaws came out of the water. That was by far my favorite.
This is a photographer's dream come true, obviously, you know. It doesn't matter what politician it is or what party they're from. When politicians get in the boats, getting in and out of boats, there's always potential for a snoo. There's always a slip between cup and lip.
Many's the slip.
Twixt
cup and lip.
And so this is taken by Dylan Vaughan, who's a Kilkenny-based freelance photographer. Very good photographer as well. And so I think there was maybe only one or two people there. But yeah, there was, it was during the big floods in 2015. And Joan was the Minister for State for the Environment. Mm. Oh, sorry, no. She was a Taoiseach, and she was with the Minister for State for the Environment, Anne Phelan, and the both of them were in the boat, actually. And so it says, she experienced the hardship of the floods at close quarters today when she tipped out of a canoe and into the icy flow of the River Nore. And the icy flow of the newspaper headlines the next day as well.
There was a few shots of you. Became such an image. There was also a slight video, and we were able to see the image of a man in waders pulling this canoe along. And you were thinking, why risk it? And then you're going, did she get into the boat because she didn't want the Bertie image of?
Only a couple of inches of water.
Wondering, was it just to avoid the Bertie image, and then actually by setting out to avoid that?
I think they maybe wanted to make it look like it was deeper water than it actually was.
They were in deep water, all right.
Oh, definitely.
But there was a political context to that as well, and the photograph sums up where politically Joan was at that time. She was in water at that stage. Labour were very unpopular.
They were taking on water anyway.
Yeah, they were very unpopular, mm-hmm. It spoke to a wider meaning than just a quick splash. It spoke to a much wider meaning that the boat had capsized, that Labour were going to get an awful hammering in the elections. And timing wise, it was a fabulous photograph.
Yeah, exactly. It sort of encapsulated the party's fortunes in the electorate.
At that time, it was a great photograph.
Very prophetic picture by Dylan Farquhar.
I do remember even people looking back on it, and there was a lot of unfortunate Joanisms, you know, people with expensive phones. There was all of these images. So there was literally an audience hoping that she'd fall. I hate to say it, but it's that, you know, every time it gets cold in Dublin, someone posts that 8 second clip of the guy slipping on the concrete.
Yeah.
And we all go, that's awful. And we all laugh along anyway. And this is the same. This image is the same. If anybody so much as says, you know, oh, well, you know, this is, remember, they all go, oh, yeah, but remember the time she fell out of the boat, you know?
There are, like with Willie, that picture with the gun is a career defining picture. I think the one with the boat is career defining for Joan as well. It's career defining.
A lot of people remember that picture. Remember just being agog when I saw it on Twitter, you know? I couldn't believe it. Like, you know,
I remember how fast it moved. So
it
electrified Twitter
but it's funny, like, because some of the photos, and like one of the photos that was iconic last year was snapped by Jack Power running up the road from the Irish Times to outside the Take Back the City protest.
Brilliant photograph.
He had literally just run up the road, and I'd say he'd seen on the old DMs channels that something was going down, and mm-hmm. away he went. But you know, so it's just capturing that moment sometimes, and that picture is the image of the Gardaí with, in effect, what did the Gardaí called them, hoods?
And they were wearing balaclavas.
Balaclavas,
fire retardant
hoods.
Yeah, they weren't wearing the correct attire.
While there was,
according to the Garda commissioner,
while there were heavies behind them manhandling a peaceful protest, in effect. I'm going to move us on to the next one because it's a subject close to my heart. Our current Taoiseach, who is, I would say, possibly the biggest curator of his own image that we've seen of someone to hold the office, getting down in Muddy Nile.
Yep. Well, this is actually taken by my partner, Laura Hutton. And she took this in 2013. And it's Leo taking part in one of these hell and back endurance races in Wicklow.
Up in Kilruddery.
So if I try to explain it, it's basically Leo climbing up a very slimy, greasy wall of mud and getting over the top of it. And on the face of it, it shows him to be a very strong guy and, you know, super fit and everything. It's the kind of the slimy, greasy climbing
at the pole.
So this picture has been used.
Yeah.
And on other occasions when there've been less than favorable stories about him in the papers, you know, about his rise to power and all the rest of it. And that might even feature in Gavin Reilly's book as well. I'm not too sure. there's plenty.
Well, when you think about it, he was the most prepared for Taoiseach that we've ever seen. He had got his website ready years in advance of any campaign. He had, it was over. It reminds me of, I'm going to mess up here, but I think it was it the 67 with the 8 day war or whatever it was, where it was over before lunchtime because the Israelis had taken out the Air Force had taken out all of the other, Egyptian Air Force. Before the echo of the starting gun had finished, Leo had enough ministers declared to say the race was over. And there was the next pantomime was him standing on Leo Street with cupcakes with his name on them, you know, and it was a fait accompli. But I suppose, the image of the mud, but also the image on his face. I'd say the people zoom in because when you look at the face, you see a man who really, really wants this.
He's determined. Covered in mud. His hair, his face. Yeah. You know, it's like it's a great photograph. Yeah. It really is.
It captures him very well. There's a determination there. And I don't say that as someone who, look, I've done that bloody race at least 6 or 7 times myself.
I wouldn't even attempt it. I wouldn't count myself as a fit
that's
person.
That's me and you.
Yeah. So I say, to anybody who does one of those hell and back races, you know, fair play to them. It's not easy, like, you know, so.
It's a classic image and it fits in keeping with who we know now as probably, you know, if Oliver Callum was here, he'd give me the name of the types of suits he wears and you know, the way he puts himself forward and presents himself.
Also, he likes to dress up as well. Like, I mean, I photographed him in a Coast Guard uniform. Photographed him up in ESB pole with the, you know,
hard hat and
He's like one of these people who likes the photographs.
The photographs, that, you know, we all take them and we recaption them with whatever little witty ditty we want to put on it. You know, and I do like that. You know, there was one of Leo was wearing a hard hat and he had a yellow vest on and he's looking up at the sky and there's a guy trying to explain something and I went, near, far away. You know, I quite like those.
We just take the photographs and I laugh when I see some of the...
There was a classic one. It reminds me of the other image of who again, I'm going to quote Oliver Callan, the Minister for Rolling Up Sleeves, Owen Murphy. It wasn't his classic one of him at a pier trying to hand
Was it an election flyer?
Yeah, an election flyer to someone in, and it was, but I could be wrong, but I believe it emerged that the entire thing was staged eventually.
That worked in its benefit because before that happened, I had never heard of him.
That's the truth of it.
Now I know who he is very well.
The next one, and this is your neck of the woods, is Ian Paisley Sr. And he's sitting very comfortably on a couch, quite happy with himself. And he's doing the peace sign, but he's doing the old...
I'd say it's a two-finger salute, man.
The opposite, yeah. So, this is a picture I took. And it's probably my favorite picture that I've ever taken in my career. And because a couple of reasons, it's a very nice, technically done photograph because it's just using light coming in a window.
Yeah,
there's no like artificial lighting or anything in it, but also it captured a time in Northern Ireland when things were on the up. This was after the St Andrews Agreement.
Yes,
and you know, this is after Ian Paisley had sat down at a table with Gerry Adams and Stormont, and that photograph was to me completely amazing because we had spent years trying to get pictures of DUP and Sinn Féin politicians in the same room. And they would always go to the opposite ends of the leisure centre. You know, the council, they wouldn't even walk past each other. And this is a totally different mood now. Things were, the talks were starting to become positive again. And after, I should have actually included the other one, about maybe a month after that, was the famous Chuckle Brothers picture.
Yes.
Taken classic. By Paul Faith, who's my like big hero. Like, he's a brilliant photographer. And I watched a documentary about him on TV when I was 16. And kind of one of the reasons I got into photography was watching it, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, so a photographer standing behind me had said, asked him to give him a V for victory sign.
Yeah.
And Ian knew the particular photographer, and he says, oh, that's for you there. And so it was a very lighthearted moment. And it was a,
but
it
the
was,
actual, the composition of the photograph is fabulous.
It's beautiful, yeah.
The background is completely dark.
Yeah,
which brings him out even more. The composition is beautiful. I mean,
it's a very relaxed pose, and it's the proper man spread. Somebody's sitting on a buzzer tree.
He is well and truly comfortable in his skin.
So he's not tense.
No.
He's so laid back, and he has his arm on the couch and everything. And
which is
a rosette.
Which, as you put it in the context of the Chuckle Brothers, it showed you where he was in his life, where he'd come to. He was more at peace with himself, I'd imagine, to be able to do those things.
Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned things like that. Like, I remember last summer trying to capture there was a red moon when I was in Spain. I was trying to capture it, and I couldn't. Never said you can't capture it, but there was a fluky one where someone behind me had a proper SLR, and when their light had given off enough to pick up another, you know, and you're looking through and you're going, ah, it was all because I piggybacked on the back
someone
of
someone else's flash. That's a trick we use all the time.
I'm looking at that, and you can see that's why you can see the different shades and the different.
I'd be very surprised.
It's indirect light coming from the side.
I'd be very surprised if the Paisley family don't have a copy of that photograph in their home.
I haven't spoken to them about it, but I know that politicians do frequently contact photographers looking for pictures.
Well, it captures the man quite well. Yeah, it does capture him.
Speaking of capturing the man quite well, I'm moving us on because because the next picture is a man who looks like he's captured and probably should have been kept there. Phil Hogan, our EU commissioner, who we sent off. He was minister for the environment at the time, and minister for turning your water down to a trickle.
Minister for strong arming you.
This is my favorite picture of the lot, and it's again taken by Leon Farrell. Great photographer in 2015, and so it's he was a EU commissioner for agriculture at the time, and he was visiting a laboratory testing facility in Newbridge in County Kildare, and what I don't know what happened or how this photo came about, but so Phil was inside. He was obviously, he's wearing the surgical white gown and all that, and he was taken into a sort of an area that the media weren't allowed into to get a, you know, this happens frequently.
Yeah.
The minister will be taken into a sterile area where we are not allowed into because, you know, we're the media. We can't go into that nice clean place. So they had cajoled him and asked him to look through the window and the door. But what Phil couldn't see underneath him, there was a sign that said, toxic biological hazard. So it kind of looked like he was locked in there for all of our safety. You know?
It has the connotation of Hannibal Lecter behind the glass. It has the connotation.
Yeah, he's got a funny kind of strange look in his face.
Yeah, and I'm not even going to. I remember when myself and Martin started first, so we were kind of calling ourselves the Waldorf and Statler of podcasting. And there's an element of that as well about the whole. But the. The actual image, I suppose, folks, you have to check this one out. Because when you look
one
how
of
it.
The funniest political photographs you've ever seen.
And when we talk about a sense of foreboding, I mean, he literally became so toxic that his own party said, right,
we'll impose him on Europe.
We can nominate someone. You know what? Big job for you here, Phil. Yeah. It's not that the public hate you or that you've really come across really badly.
Again, the composition of that photograph is excellent. And it's an excellent composition. I mean, his placing within the frame of the window, it could even be stuck on there. It could be a passport photograph on there.
Yeah, but see, you know, Leon, there's a corridor in the background.
Yes.
The way the angles of the corridor. Or go, they draw your eye into his face, you know. So it's, if it had been taken maybe slightly to the left or the right, it would have been a bit more confusing looking. But it's a great.
Yeah, the composition is lovely. It is. Yeah. I still think that the Ian Paisley composition is better, but that's a perfect one. Mm-hmm. Now, this next photograph.
This is our last one, and I'm going to say something before you introduce him, Martin. It's so good to me. I thought it had to be fake.
And I haven't seen this before, and I don't know how I didn't see
this.
Well,
this is an award-winning image as well.
Yeah, and I hadn't seen it before. This is Gerry Adams, and he's holding up
a copy of the proclamation.
Yeah, and very nice suit and sunglasses. It's the sunglasses.
Yes.
Without the sunglasses, it's not a particularly exceptional photograph.
Yes.
With the sunglasses, it has a whole new aspect.
Well, you don't really see Gerry Adams wearing sunglasses too often, you know. And the reason he's wearing them is because he had recently had eye surgery.
That's right.
And I can't remember what the surgery was, but he had to wear these sunglasses. And Tom had a very funny caption on it. Let me see what he said. Oh, yeah, that's right. It was, the future's so bright, I've got to wear shades. So this is taken by Tom Honan, who's the current Irish Press Photographer of the Year and very deserving of it. He's another veteran photographer who's been taking pictures for 25 years, I think, you know.
Yeah.
And he does everything, sports, news, politics a lot. And he's a great colleague. And this was the political photograph of the year in 2013. And up until it was shown at the awards on the big screen, I hadn't seen it myself. I hadn't seen it in the papers or anything.
Yeah.
But it was absolutely hilarious. And the laugh that it got in the room, when it was shown on the big 50-inch, whatever it was.
All you need him there.
HD display.
Now, I'm very cognizant of our listeners and all guys, so I'm going to just shout out. All he needed to do was caption that with, I was not a member of
the... Exactly. Yeah, he could be more shady looking.
It is iconic. As I said, I thought it looked almost like, you know, where your kids grab your phone and they hand you back your own pictures where they've put sunglasses and stuff on you.
The fog life meme.
Yeah.
You know, that's exactly what it looks like.
It is a brilliant picture. And I'd actually say, Martin, what does it for me is the fact that he's standing at the plinth and the plinth says Dublin Castle.
It does. I've just
taken it. It's mine.
It's actually, out of all the photographs, very hard to pick one individual photograph there that's any better than the rest. Kind of edging towards the Ian Paisley one.
I'm glad to say that since I took it. But
That's recently bias.
Yeah. No, I
proximity
no,
bias.
No, I mean, just because I know the circumstances in which that Phil Hogan picture was taken in.
Yeah.
Though the fact that it is it's a sort of a totally controlled, contrived photocall.
Mm.
And to get him and to manipulate him into that position, and for the press officer not to notice that sign and go, hang on here, hang on. Because I've been at many things where somebody has been in the departure lounge of their career and exit signs above doors have been covered with black bags by press handlers.
They're very conscious, they see everything. Yeah, they have to. That's their job.
Obviously. Yeah, but they're well paid to look out for these things. So,
Well, being a photographer is a hard job. And there is a difference between, all of us like to take snaps, but what you do is different. You're on the road.
You spend most of your day driving or standing outside courthouses or business premises or, and then very little actually taking photographs.
Yeah.
So that's why you have the skill is being able to take a picture quickly and adapt to different lighting conditions or, like, for instance, people who don't want to be photographed, or like I've been at, say, courts where people have had security firms with them, celebrities, or they're shining torches in your faces, they're pushing and shoving you about. And on top of that, you've got maybe a harsh sunlight or big shadows. And so you have to be very, very quick. And that's why it's a great payoff when you see a picture in the paper.
Does it become second nature to you when you're looking at the light? You automatically know what angle you're going to come at.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, normally you've got a lot of time to figure it out, but then the worst thing is that, the sun could come out or a cloud could come out just after you've set your camera for a certain thing, and then all hell breaks loose. Somebody has been released from court, or they're, somebody's been sentenced to 10 years and they're getting into the back of a prison van, and everybody's trying to shout, and there's journalists running around with microphones and booms in your face and everything, So sometimes it can be very pressurized.
I met you at the climate strike march. if you remember.
Yes, yes.
It was total chaos.
Absolute chaos.
I'd say 12, 15.
Dangerous. Like
12, 15,000 teenage kids swirling about.
Very little stewarding.
You're trying to lug the camera equipment. I'm trying to monitor a few kids. And I remember just thinking, and I said, no, no. And Dave was like, we're literally swept different directions by the crowd.
We couldn't even stop.
Tried to stop midstream and we're carried away by the tide. And I can only imagine trying to do that. I'm going to be a bit more, this has been great fun, but unfortunately it's not always great fun. We've seen where journalists and photographers put themselves in, and we've seen only too recently with the tragic events in Derry, where a young lady's life was needlessly taken, and
you were there.
I was there, yeah. And I had never met Lara McKee before, and I'd never heard of her. Although I know that my journalist colleagues had, and they followed her Twitter account very closely as well. But I got a phone call about 10:30 from a colleague to say there was houses. I was actually in Derry visiting in-laws at the time. And we had photographed Nancy Pelosi up on the border
that day.
You know, that's why I was up there. So I was making a weekend of it with the visiting the in-laws with my son, and got a tweet and a phone call. Oh, there's a bit of trouble in Craigan.
Hmm.
So what? You know, there's always a bit of trouble. In you know, Craigan, yeah. There's always a few petrol bombs here and there. You know, it's sporadic. You know, and I just thought it's nothing's going to come of that. You know, but then. I saw pictures of burning cars and burning truck or van, and thought, okay, well, this is escalated a wee bit, and I better go up here and just sort this out, you know. So took a few photographs of these guys throwing petrol bombs, and then I said, I better do a bit of video on my phone here. I was standing very close to where Lara was standing beside, not exactly where she was, but beside sort of the same police jeep. I know exactly where it happened. And I said, oh, my phone battery's dead. I better go and get the charger for the battery, for the phone, the plug-in battery. So I went to the car, which was about 100 yards away, came back, heard a whole commotion, and saw someone being bundled into the back of a police jeep, and uproar, people shouting and screaming and literally arguing with each other in the street as well. And I thought that somebody had been arrested for throwing petrol bombs or stones at the police. But the jeep sped off at high speed, and the next thing, the white tape came out, and the spot where I was standing in was then become a crime scene. And it very quickly became evident to everybody that somebody had been shot. And so, like, the thing is, the person who shot her was only about 150 yards down the street. It is amazing to me, you know, how these things happen. You know, up until that point, before Lara was shot, it was a sort of an atmosphere of enjoyment. People, like, this is your, it's hard for me to explain to people, but, you know, a riot is a very exciting thing. And even though it's sort of dangerous and there's so much of it that happens in Northern Ireland, that people don't really feel under threat. And also, it's difficult for us in the media. People say, like, you know, why don't you wear body armor or a helmet? If you think of the situation, there's smoke, noises, fire. You know, if someone is shooting at the police, all they can see is a smoky scene up the street. And if they see somebody wearing a helmet and a flak jacket,
Think target.
Yeah. So that's why I don't wear one, you know, and simply for by protection.
Philip O'Connor made the same point recently when he was talking about it. He said he has a lot of that equipment
and
he makes a call when he's going in onto a scene. Where he's going to, what he's going to do, and sometimes he has to, and sometimes he says it's better to stand on the side of the rioters when things are thrown at, but then you risk the police coming at you. So he said, let's be clear, the people at fault are the people who
pull the trigger.
Yes. You know, there's absolutely no, we were not attributing blame anywhere else but there. But what you do is you put yourself into harm's way. You yourself were shot.
Yes, and this is why I'm very acutely aware now of police procedures and drills and things like that. So I don't even remember what year it was. I think it was 2013. But I was at a same thing. I was sent to cover a riot in East Belfast, and we were photographing some people who were burning vehicles and throwing petrol bombs about a quarter of a mile up the road. We were very, very far away from the trouble. But the police had stationed themselves at the entrance to this particular street. And there was a peace wall beside us. And a guy from the Short Strand, who was a dissident Republican, decided he would attack the police. But the police were all locked up inside their bulletproof jeeps. And all the media, there was like 7 or 8 of us all standing there, Sky TV and BBC and all the agencies are all sitting having a chat and talking about this trouble in the distance. And suddenly I looked around and I saw a pair of surgical gloves and a Celtic scarf and, you know, a hat. And I just went, oh my God, this guy has got a gun here, you know.
Yeah.
And it's very close to me, you know, maybe just double the distance we are from each other now, you know.
So less than 10 feet.
Yeah, yeah. And but he was up on top of a wall looking down.
Okay.
And so I turned my back to run away and I heard shots being fired and I felt a sort of a bang in the back of my leg and I thought, oh, the police have shot me with a plastic bullet here.
Yeah.
By mistake, they're shooting at this guy and I've got hit by him. It never even dawned to me that I had been shot, you know, by a real bullet, like, you know. And but very quickly, it wasn't pain now. That's the strange thing. It was completely numb and but a strange sensation of cold blood running down the back of my leg.
Yeah.
And then the front. So what happened was the person had shot at the police jeep. And as I was running past it, the bullet had come in the back of my leg and straight out the front.
Okay.
And then I sort of lost the ability to walk. My leg just stopped working and seized up. And I sort of looked around and didn't really know what to do. And I heard everybody shouting, no, somebody's been shot, somebody's been shot. And I kind of put my hand up like a wee kid in school, you know, for the teacher. Like,
it was me.
To the policeman in the jeep. I think I've been shot here.
Sorry, officers, or anything.
Yeah, and fair play to them.
Yeah.
They're very highly trained and they had a tourniquet on my leg really quickly and they did the first aid, put a big bandage on it and everything. And just fortuitously for me, there was an ambulance depot across the street. But one of the bullets had actually gone through the window of the ambulance depot.
Right.
And when I was driven into the ambulance depot in the back of an armoured Land Rover, the ambulance guy wouldn't come out until the policeman guaranteed him that there was no danger and all that, you know. But so
any long-lasting effects?
No, but as I say, and I did listen with interest to Philip O'Connor's piece about this. I was very lucky because I'm a staff photographer for an agency. So any medical bills, of which there were none, because I was up in the north and I'm I was born in Belfast. So I have access to the National Health Service and there was no prescription charges, no doctor's fees, very little physiotherapy, very cheap and all that, you know. If you were a freelance photographer, think about this. I was off work for 3 months. You know, if you're off work for 3 months,
forget about it.
You're going to not only lose your job, you're lose your house. You won't be able to pay rent.
Yeah, 3 months.
So it gave me a very good perspective on, you know, right, what's actually going on here, you know. You have to really think about this and think about I wasn't a father at the time. I am now. And certainly now, like, you reassess the situation and think very seriously before getting into harm's way, you know, but still
do the job, man.
We do it. Yeah, we still do it. There's still an adrenaline rush of being in a riot and it's still a very exciting thing to see and do. But certainly now I've been sent away for some training since that happened, courtesy of my employer. And
duck and cover.
Yeah, and now I know the police drills very well. And yeah, I don't stand beside Land Rovers in the middle of the night anymore. But yeah, I mean, that's not me blaming Lara McKee in any way. Like, she was just standing in her own street. You know, she should have been safe to go out and.
But as you said, you have covered riots and you never expected anything like that to happen to you. It wasn't something you expected to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I have been in. There was one time in Ardoyne where a blast bomb was thrown at the police and the media were all in the middle of the police and several people were badly injured by that, you know, and I was just not. I was there and I. Just pure luck that it didn't hit me, but there were people injured in the back and the leg with shrapnel and everything. And I mean, immediately I just left at that point, I was like, that was my warning. Get out of here. You know, whatever pictures I have, that'll do me for the day, you know. But yeah, I've expected it now as the peace process is, you know, 20 years since the Good Friday Agreement. You would hope that, you know, shooting and riots would be a thing of the past. And I find it very depressing, you know. That
or even that riots would be a thing of the past.
Yes, yes, yeah, indeed, exactly, yeah. But, you know, unfortunately, there are little hot spots and there's still work to be done.
Well, thank you so much for coming into us. It's been a great little chat and an insight into what you do, an insight into that it's not an easy job, a lot of work involved and risk involved. And thank you for bringing the photographs into us. They are excellent for
Well, I will get killed now if I don't mention where people can see all of the pictures. And the PPAI.ie is our website, the Press Photographers Association of Ireland. And it's basically like a reeling in the years of photography. And it's a wonderful archive. If anybody's interested in sporting life, cultural life, music, arts, politics, that's our archive of all the award-winning pictures, which have been taken over the years. And as Tony's just reminded me here, I've brought a book with me for you to give away in a competition or a Twitter poll or whatever later on.
And this is a book that you want on your coffee table. Trust me,
the book is Beyond the Moment, and it is by the PPAI. I am first and foremost, thank you very much, Niall, for coming in. I would say to our listeners, you know what you can do? You can start off by buying bloody newspapers and supporting the actual guys who take the pictures, because they put themselves out there. They are dependent on that income stream. The second thing, have a look at the PPAI.ie website. I just have it open in my hand, and it's a wonderful resource. It's you get sucked into it.
Yes.
And this book is 240 of the most iconic photos. So Niall, thank you very much for bringing it in, and we will give it away.
Oh, I'd like to win that myself. Well, we might rig this one.
A credit union this card one? Draw, is it?
Martin rigged McMahon. Yeah. Every address, he always produces a name and then has the same address that they go to.
But thank you again for coming in. And I know you've taken a hell of a journey to come in here with us today. But we see you quite often, and we'll be crossing paths, I'm sure, quite a bit again in the future.
Oh, I'm sure we will. Yeah, well, keep up the good work. Really enjoy the podcast, and we'll hope to hear some more interesting people.
We'll do our best. And last again, lads, just do support. The journalism matters. The guy behind the camera, he matters, and the people who put themselves at risk, just support them. Talk to you all soon. Take care. Bye-bye.